Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Kristen, and we'd like to welcome you to the Writer's Story.
Well, we are in different time zones and probably different weather systems. It is spring like today. It is sunny, then cloudy, but just constantly windy.
Well, oddly enough, halfway across the continent, my weather fits the same description. It is beautiful and it does feel like spring, which, and it smells like spring. So I'm in the town where I grew up, Duluth, Minnesota, and I remember this smell when I was little and getting out of school in the afternoon and walking home, crushing the remaining slush stuff on the edge of the street and smelling the kind of grass and
The
the
earth
green
warming.
that begins to emerge. So anyway, it does definitely feel like spring around here, which
Well,
is
we
great.
had some rain last night, but we also have one of my favorite things, which I call petal rain, which is when when the trees sort of dump their petals and it just covers the ground and the ground becomes very, very pink.
Oh, with the petals of blossoms. Yeah, that is a magical sort of experience.
Well, I feel like my sort of report on what I've accomplished is going to be exactly the same as last month because I feel like this revision process is just taking forever. And I'm still on the big helicopter revision, so I'm still thinking like, what needs to be in the book? Is it this, these scenes? How's the flow? And I've been really busy, so I haven't had a lot of time to focus on it. But I have been doing really one fun activity, and at the Festival of the Book, which was really, really fun, Ada Limon, our poet laureate, was there, and she mentioned that she and some friends do a poem a day in April. And I haven't really gotten every single day, and I did start in March. But I've written quite a few little poems, and it's been really fun. It kind of reminds me of your haiku project.
Yeah, it is so satisfying. And of course, the haiku is pretty low-hanging fruit with three lines. I told you about my tonka kick, right? Where I got writing tonkas, which I only became acquainted with recently, that are seven lines. So stretching a little bit the
Lots of
poem, but it
extra.
is
You
so
read
much
them.
fun.
You read them at our last gathering.
That's right. But it's so satisfying, I think. And it is a nice little moment in the day. I don't know if this is how it feels to you when you work on that poem, a moment in the day to really be totally present and paying attention to that experience, that image, that feeling that you're capturing in a poem.
Definitely.
Cool.
And you've been doing a little writing out there?
I have a couple of different projects. One of them I maybe won't get into too much because it's so hard to describe. But the upshot of it is a kind of a combo of spirituality and environmental concerns. And so that's one project. I'm calling it at this point a liturgy for the grief-stricken world-smitten, grief-stricken, constantly falling downers who will not give up. For those of us who I think I can use this word on our podcast, who give a shit about the environment and who are, because of that caring, sometimes in really difficult emotional and spiritual spaces to sort of feed that. And that small project that I finished recently is op-ed length, 700 words, and I submitted as an op-ed long shot to the Minneapolis Star Tribune based on an experience of sitting in a University for Seniors class with my dad that resulted in my imagination of a mashup of the Holy Week of Easter, from Palm Sunday to Easter, because that was the period of time in which this class happened, and mining. That is mining for minerals here in the North
Well,
Country,
maybe
which
you
is
need to
exquisite.
submit it next year, 3 weeks before Easter.
Yes. Yeah, the timing as far as that goes is, yeah, a little off. Anyway, but it's related to my the God of Earth book that I wrote a few years ago.
I'm glad you've been writing.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Awesome.
Living with my dad is an interesting experience. He's such a wonderful guy, and walking with him through this experience of dementia and end of life, he's 92, is a real privilege. And yeah, anyway,
Yeah.
on we go.
Yes. Well, we have a guest today, and this is an old friend of mine. We met each other when our kids were, I think, 9 months and maybe a little over a year. My son's a little older than her oldest. And the next thing you know, this is what happens when you meet people in New York. She moved away, and I followed her on social media, and she had another child, and she, or some maybe before she left, she had another child, and then she has become very active as a writer and has written 2 books, one called It's a Lot to Unpack, and the first, There's Someplace Like Home, Lessons from a Decade Abroad, which are essays, about being an expatriate. Anyway.
Cool.
So I can't wait to talk to her and catch up with her. She's hilarious, and she has a real feminist point of view, which is interesting because I think a lot of people look at her and think, well, she doesn't have a job, so how could she be a feminist? So I really am excited to talk to her about all her adventures, and she lives right now in Berlin,
Oh my,
so
great.
it's much later there when.
Well, are we going to wake her up? Let's call her up and wake her up.
Let's do it. Hi, Dina, how are you?
Hey, Meredith. Nice to hear from you. I'm really well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. What time is it in Berlin?
It is wine time, Meredith.
Oh, I love
That
that.
doesn't clear anything
It
up, Dina, so.
is. It is 7:30. 8 p.m.
Oh,
or
okay.
in universal time, 1938, I think. I get that one confused all the time.
Oh, I have
Definitely.
I don't have dyslexia, but I have time zone lexia,
Yeah.
if there is such a thing. I've woken people up in California at ungodly hours and like
We are 6 hours ahead
6 hours ahead. Yeah.
of you.
Yeah. Well,
Those Germans, they're always ahead of us, Meredith. Yeah, those Germans.
Just trying to catch up. I'm just trying to
We'll
catch
get
up.
it. We'll get there one day. We'll catch up.
Yes. Yes. Well, it is just lovely to see you, and we can't wait to talk to you about your latest book.
Thank you. It's really, really great to be with you both.
Fun. But
Or
I, the first
virtually.
question we always ask is sort of, how did you become a writer?
That's a really good question. And someone asked me that recently, and my answer was, I think it's something that I've always been. So I can't really, if I had to pinpoint a time, it would be when my first grade teacher, Mrs. D'Alessandro, handed us a nice lined piece of white paper and a pencil and said, go to town. And that is really the first time that I remember being able to tell a story with words. And so I've always written. And I think in a few of my bios, I talk about, writing cringeworthy poetry as a teenager and stories about, witches in Salem and straight on through. But there have been long gaps in my writing over the course of my life. So.
Are you a journal keeper, Dina?
I have to say yes and no. I've
Same.
always, yes. So I was trying to think. I always did keep journals, but now my journal is Facebook. If that is, yeah, if that's an allowable answer. But yes, I have.
Absolutely.
In fact, I went back to my mom's house a few years ago and went through the base, cleaned out the basement and found a box full of fabric colored journals with all those poems about the stars and the moon and boys that didn't love me back, and
basically Taylor Swift songs.
But there was some good stuff in there too, but it really gives you a, it's nice to have that to go back to and see how things have progressed and sometimes how they haven't.
Oh yeah.
And you've really been chronicling and reflecting on living abroad.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the published work that you've been working at away at. Would you tell us a little about like how that got started, the writing journey of your first kind of reflections in a published form of this experience of your life?
So we moved abroad. We moved from New York City to Nicosia, Cyprus in 2008, and I had two very young kids, and my life did a complete 180. I don't think it could have changed any more than it did. But I was wrapped up in having two young kids and basically trying to survive.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, these were really little kids.
Yeah. Little kids. My youngest was 6 months old. My older one was four. So really, it was about survival. And then a few years later, we made the move to Copenhagen in late 2011. And by that point, the kids were a little bit older. They were going to both be in school. So I found myself with a little bit of, we talk about a room of one's own. So a little bit of space to think about what I wanted to do. So I did what everyone in 2012 was doing and started a blog.
Ah, yes.
But I didn't know what avenue the blog was going to take it. So it was all over the place. I was writing about knitting and jewelry making and what I wanted to do and motherhood. And part of that was writing about, life abroad and viewing my home country, through a different lens and what life was like living in someone else's country. And so that's when the blog really started to kind of take shape and ended up being about parenting and life abroad and the intersection of both of those. Mm-hmm. And so I kept up the blog for a long time. I would say probably until about 2018. And I was putting out there like two or three posts a week, pretty lengthy, 800 word to 1,000 word posts. So it was, quite substantial. And yet, people would say, what do you do? And I'd say, well, I write a blog. And oh, you write a mommy blog. And no, not really. But well, what do you write? What do you write? And so it became very important for me to have a physical, tangible object with my name on it. So someone said, why don't you take some of your blog pieces and pull them together into a compilation, which is what I did in 2018 with my first book of essays, which is There's Someplace Like Home. So that was a pretty easy, that was a pretty easy segue into the published world there. And then, another few years went by, another move, and I decided it was time to do something again. And my original idea was to do something similar, just pull essays that I had been working on or had, in those little journals, some ideas for. But when I sat down to write this one, it really kind of turned into something a little bit more narrative, which no one was more surprised than me.
And when you say narrative, can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, I think my idea originally were the sort of things that I had learned. And then when we moved to Berlin, I became obsessed with the idea of living, having started in Nicosia, which is a walled capital city still, and moving to Berlin, which was a walled capital city and is no longer. And so I became, just really hyper-focused on these idea of walls and then what these walls mean and these two cities and being bookended by one wall that's still there and one wall that's come down and what does that mean for me? And so I started to weave in this idea about identity and through these cities. And I think I talk about Nicosia a little bit in the book, but it's primarily New York, Copenhagen, and a little bit of Berlin at the end. But yeah, so the idea of my identity once I've left kind of being behind a wall. and how I could find that again. So then it became important for me to kind of tell it not so much in a chronological, well, a little bit of a chronological order, but just weave in those ideas together.
Yeah, you talk a lot about identity and sort of how other people perceive your identity, yeah, as well as how you feel yourself. And I thought there was a really wonderful sort of moment where you are so sure that you are a New Yorker through and through. You're like, that was the place I felt the most at home. That's where I became an adult, an independent adult. Yeah. That's where you met your husband, all this sort of stuff. And then the first time the first time you go back to New York and have this moment where you realize, I don't really live here anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where I'm from anymore, because you're only staying in each of these places you know temporarily.
Yeah, it's a big question. We get asked a lot. I think a lot of international people get asked a lot about the idea of home and what our concept, you know, what the concept of home is. But I think it took 15 years of living abroad for me to be able to look back and see this. You know, I've had a few people read the book and say, oh, I didn't know you felt that way. And I said, I'm not sure I knew I felt that way. You know, I have to have that much removal from where I was to be able to look back and reflect on it. But I will always think of myself as a New Yorker. It's like a New Yorker that lives in Berlin right now.
I'm sure it's fine to think that way. I think that I had a very different experience with New York. I moved there much later than you did, and although there was many things I really liked about it, I never felt that it was where I was from.
So
moving back home, which was Charlottesville, where I live now, and I've lived for 15 years, felt more natural to me. You know, I never quite got the rhythms of New York, really. But, you know, we went back for a visit, and I was telling you, you know, strolled by the Grand Street Playground, you know, that kind of stuff. And
it's unrecognizable.
It's unrecognizable, but at the same time, it's super easy for me to get around in it, you know. I mean, I feel like I do know it really well.
That muscle memory kicks in, right? And you know where to get off the train, but I was there for 20 years, so.
My gosh. Okay, so here's the biggest thing I have to tell you, Dina. Big news. You can just take your credit card and put it on the turnstile on the... And years ago when I was
like, swiping the Metro card.
When I was a student at NYU, I remember the tokens.
I started with tokens.
That's what I'm thinking about.
And as soon as we went to the cards, I was like, it's a slippery slope. It goes to $1.25, and you know, they could just charge you whatever the heck they want. You just know it.
So speaking of walls and the places you live, Dina, I just learned last week that Wall Street in Manhattan is named because there was a fortress wall. So this is after conquest, right? And with the Native Americans, the Indians, the Lenape, and the European
trying to keep them out.
Colonialists
out of
built
the financial
a
sector.
Fortress wall.
Well, Kristen, now I have to go back and edit my book.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Well, you never did live
another wall.
But you didn't live downtown, did you? You never lived downtown, far downtown.
No. So we'll just pretend, yes.
I didn't know that either. Yeah, he was a great teacher, actually. A native guy he's native to Louisiana, but he, I can't remember, Redbone maybe community, who has been long teaching up here in northern Minnesota in the Native American Studies program. Anyway, he was a great teacher, and he had all these great questions, like, do you know the most common signature on a treaty?
On a tree?
Treaty.
Yeah, the treaties between the Native
treaty.
And the United States government. And it's an X.
Because people didn't know how to read.
Yeah, I mean,
yes. And also, you know, they were coerced into so much. Anyway, we don't need to get into all the politics, but one of the questions he asked was, you know, Do you know why it's called Wall Street? We're all kind of like,
Yeah. You know,
what's Wall Street?
I,
Isn't that where all the money is?
so many street names are incredibly literal in New York, and
Yeah,
it is pretty
totally.
hilarious.
Well, I live right by Mauer Street, which is Wall. So there you go. Wow. Yes.
Well,
You know, your walls
I'm
all over the
apparently,
place.
yes, I'm just, yes, I'm surrounded. There's metaphors
I don't
everywhere.
know if I've ever told Kristen this story, but it was like I had just arrived in New York and I was freelancing and I was at Broadway audio. I think what it's called, Broadway audio. Anyway, it's owned by the SNL guy, and I'm in the elevator and I'm looking at a map and I go, "Is Broadway an avenue or a street?" And someone goes, "It's a way,
It's a way. It's
Broadway."
the
And I'm like,
broad way.
oh, like I never split the two, and it just somehow got mushed together. And you know, I just did not see
Well,
the tree for the forest really there. So anyway.
I just have worked on this series of historical fiction, Dina, that is set in the ancient Near East, which is related to my academic background. And you in Berlin have part of the wall of the ancient Mesopotamians, is it the
And
Pergamon?
the Pergamon, which is now closed for renovations for 14 years.
Well, maybe
No.
you'll live there long enough to see it then.
I went before they closed it.
Gonna
But
die before they open it
that's
again.
some serious renovations, right?
No kidding. But yeah,
Yes.
that's the Ishtar Gate, the great
Yes.
wall of one of the
I
most
have
important
seen it.
entrances
I went to
into an
see
Arab
it when I
landscape.
was there.
I didn't
So,
go there when
yes.
Dina was living there, but I had another friend living there that I went out with, an American friend. It was fun. And I think their son ended up going for free to college in Germany.
Yeah, there you go. There
Free
you
university system. So, pulling together the book, was that sort of that journey, did it really crystallize? It sounds like a lot of things in your mind about what you are feeling now by sort of pulling together the writing, and how did that sort of change? Like, how did that compilation help you sort of change?
Say, so how did it help
Well,
me?
like, it sounds like the act of sort of pulling together all that history sort of maybe clarified some things for you about.
Yes, absolutely. And it was a very cathartic, selfish in a way, piece of writing, because I spent a lot of time kind of examining, like I said, my ideas of myself, what it means to be a mother, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be, someone living outside of your home country. And I think memoirs in general are quite selfish, aren't they? I guess the hope is that you are able to, touch upon enough, universal kind of truths that other readers see themselves in there. But yeah, absolutely. It was definitely a cathartic experience that, and once it started to come together, it really came together quite quickly. So part of my crappy writing process is that I spend a lot of time thinking, and mulling things over in my head, and not actually writing. But then when I do sit down to write, I write nonstop for 6 weeks, which I hate. I
Which you
wish that
hate.
I hate it. I'm so organized in every other aspect of my life, except that. So
But this sounds like a process that works for you. And doesn't Joyce Carol Oates, like, didn't she, doesn't she say she writes, basically writes while she's running? So it's all in her head. And then
I
it's
don't
just
run.
Sits, no, well,
But
whatever is
yes,
your
no,
other
absolutely. I
activity
mean,
of choice,
yeah,
but that you're
walking.
thinking, you're working through it.
Yes, absolutely. And so that was it. I'd walk around the city, and I was working through these ideas in my head while I was walking. And it took some time to percolate. And then when it came time to sit down, I think, yeah, 6, 7 weeks of just, kind of nonstop writing. Some of it I had from other things that so I was pulling ideas, from previous essays or pieces that I had thought about working on and had put away. So it wasn't totally from scratch.
Well, you say it's a selfish activity, but I think the person you're probably the hardest on in the book is yourself, you know, sort of describing when you have your meltdowns,
Well, there's nothing worse than like an insufferable, you know.
Insufferable sufferer. But Dina, it is, I want to pick up on what Meredith said. I hear the selfish piece of it, and it's wonderful that it was cathartic for you, but I would argue that it's a great act of generosity to look so keenly and so frankly at your own experience, and then to share that with people, because when you're really telling the truth of experience with its most specificity of it to one's life, makes it oddly even more universal. That is, that for a lot of people, that speaks then to something that they may not have been able to articulate or really wrap their heads around. So I would argue that it can be a great act of generosity when you tell it true.
Well, thank you. I'll take that.
Take it. Take it and run.
I would, yes,
or walk.
Yes. I think that's the hope. You know, when you finish something, and you both know, when you know, sometimes when you're in the thick of it, you're not quite sure what the end product is going to feel like or look like. And I think by the time I finished and saw what I had, yes, I was able to say, I think that there are people that will be able to read this and say, I know these feelings because I felt them too. And not, I was hoping, and I do hope, not just internationals or globally mobile, as we say now, women who have given up careers to raise their children, or women who might have felt shunted into a different role because of caring for aging parents, or any number of things. So I have been, it's been really nice to hear back from people who have read the book, who from all walks, who have found bits and pieces of themselves in there. So I would go with generous.
I think there was a pop star the other day who said, you know, having she was somebody who had like a couple hits, and then she said, oh, having kids, I love them, they ruined my life. Yeah. And she got a lot of pushback from that. But I think one of the things that's really interesting to me is that a lot of women end up at home with a couple small children, and they feel like they're on an island, but you were literally on an island. And and so I think that can really resonate with a lot of women, because they feel like suddenly they have a different identity. You know, they're somebody's mom 24/7, and they have, you know, but it just, so it's interesting because you sort of lay it out, and it's just such a perfect metaphor.
Yeah. I missed that one, Meredith. I didn't even think about it.
See,
yeah, it's a literal island.
Part two. This is the second book.
Yeah. It's isolating. And I think for me, a lot of that unhappiness initially, there were so many emotions, but also the guilt at feeling like I shouldn't feel that way. I'm supposed to feel grateful for being a mother, and I did, of course, but there were times where it was very difficult. And here we are in this, you know, Mediterranean island that lots of people would kill to be on, and I was unhappy. And so that just compounded all of those feelings. And I now, when I meet people that are out on their first sort of international journey or whatever, the first thing I say to them is, it's hard. You know, it is hard, and you are not imagining it, because I wish somebody had said that to me.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Mm-hmm. So, and you need to give yourself the space and the grace to kind of find your footing. And it takes a while, you know, it takes a while. So,
yeah. And then your whole thing of when you talk about finally feeling like Copenhagen might be home, and then now you had to move to Berlin.
Oh, yeah. And I felt, yeah, I mean, Copenhagen is a mad, have you been?
No, I've never been. Oh, you've
it's
been.
A, it really is a fairy tale. It is It's not perfect, but it's a really, really special place. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time thinking, had we started in Copenhagen, would I feel differently? Because a lot of it is not just about the where, but about who you are at that point in time. For me, it was a lot about where my kids were. And again, that freedom and that space to explore who I was a bit more. But I did love the city. And yeah, we were there for, you know, we were there for a little over 10 years. And it was hard to say goodbye.
Yeah.
It was really hard.
Yeah.
Oh. I say two city loves. How lucky am I that I've had, you know, two cities that feel close to my heart. So, you know.
Well, it's going to be hard to say goodbye to you, Dina. I've so enjoyed our conversation.
Oh, this has been
great.
Really, really nice to talk to you both. Thank you.
And yeah, it's just lovely, and it's been fun to follow you on social media. I am not the best poster.
That's okay. Doing the work for us.
I do a lot of lurking. But it is fun to keep up with people, and it's been really fun to watch you go from their blog to these books, and really and as I said, I just totally enjoyed, gobbled up the book, and you know, of course,
thank you so much. It's really, really nice to hear that, and the next one will be hopefully something very different.
Oh, very intriguing. Do you have any, do you have a pitch?
So every year for the past 7 years, I spend the month of March, which is Women's History Month, highlighting forgotten women from history, which is a passion of mine. So I will be compiling those stories into a book format.
Awesome. That's great. Terrific. Well, we will look for that.
Yes.
Well, yes, I will be sure to let you know.
Well, thank you so much, and talk to you soon, I hope.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks,
all right.
Dina.
Well, it was so good to catch up with Dina and hear a little bit more about her writing journey. I thought she was very critical of her writing process, and it sounded actually kind of nice to me.
I thought so too, Ola, and it certainly has worked. Like, don't mess with that, girl. It was lovely to meet her, and I really applaud her getting into the gritty stuff of life in ways that to the outsider might seem charmed, and to be honest about the whole of it.
Yep. And many people move for love, as you know.
Yes, and but, life changes dramatically as a result of that.
Yep. But sometimes, I think the drama of having it be a whole nother country that you have to learn how to negotiate, and literally a stranger in a strange land.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so interesting to hear sort of what that does to your sense of self and your identity, and what do you cling to, and what do you sort of embrace?
Yeah, it's inspiring.
Yes, very much.
Send
so.
Us back to work, Meredith. To our own.
Exactly.
Yeah, really great to visit with Dina.
Yes, and so good to visit with you today. And
likewise, thanks.
Now it went from gray and blow rainy to sunny again here, so it is just to confirm that it is spring.
Yes, sunshine here. I'm looking out the window at the great lake, Lake Superior. It never fails to amaze, ever changing, that beautiful lake. Mm. Yeah, pine trees and birch trees. Through pines and birches, I am looking at Lake Superior.
That sounds like the beginning of a tonka.
Oh, yeah, I might have to write that down.
Well, you have an amazing rest of your day and an amazing month writing, and we will get back together next month.
Sounds great. Thanks, Meredith.
Bye-bye.